I'm sitting here looking at my notes and I'm kind of wondering why I'm doing this to myself. But I'm going to get out in the skinny branches this evening. For me anyway, maybe not for you. I'm going to talk about Dharma as it's related to trauma. And is there a relationship between Dharma and trauma? And what would be a Buddhist perspective on trauma? What would be some Buddhist practices that might be helpful for trauma? And what are maybe even some of the limitations of trying to use meditative practices or mindfulness practices as a way to deal with or to heal the reality of trauma? So first I want to ask you to not be shy. Who, besides me, who in the room feels like traumatic stress is part of your experience? History of trauma, whether it being very much a lot or a little bit, feel like you have traumatic stress in your system? Quite a bit. Yeah. So, you know, to some degree, there's that every human being actually, depending on your life experience, we actually all have a little traumatic stress in our experience, in our really in our nervous systems, and there's a wide range of that kind of traumatic stress. It could be, you know, maybe your grandmother died when you were young, and that kind of threw you off a little bit, or maybe you like broke a bone on the playground when you were a little kid and got really freaked out by that, or you know, your dog died, or there can be really subtle ways. But everybody usually will have some kind of traumatic stress in their system. It's pretty common human experience. And some people have, you know, some people actually can't function as a result of trauma. So there's a pretty wide range. One of the reasons that this is on my mind is because, first of all, I am have a long history of trauma. And for most of my life, pretended that I didn't. I was like, oh yeah, bad shit happened to me, but I'm actually fine, which wasn't true. And also because I work next door at Refuge Recovery and I work in addiction and I go to lots of conferences, and it just seems to be a word that I hear several times a day. And it's really becoming, because of PTSD and a lot of the stuff with war veterans and a lot of the secular psychology starting to notice the relationship between trauma and addiction, trauma and mental health disorders, that the culture is actually starting to pay a lot of attention to trauma and starting to actually identify and notice as it being pretty pretty severe problem. And actually, to some degree, there's a little bit of an epidemic of trauma, PTS. I dropped the D because I don't really believe it's a disorder, but post-traumatic stress. So one of the things that I like to think about, or one of the things that comes to mind for me around this, is my introduction to Dharma practice, my introduction to meditation practice, and really to the tradition of Theravadan Buddhism or insight meditation, came actually through the experience of trauma. And without getting into the whole narrative, I have done a lot of trauma therapy, and I have a trauma specialist that I work with, and I have four episodic events. So in my life there were four events in which that were traumatic, which puts me not in PTSD, but actually puts me in the category of complex trauma. I thought I just had a little PTSD. It turns out not the case. Complex trauma. I'm totally fucked is the clinical term. And actually, for me, it was a very important encounter because I was 19, a long time ago, and I had had some traumatic events in my life, but there was one that was recent in which I was with a girlfriend, and we got basically run down by a car, a drunk driver, on a dirt road in rural Massachusetts. And I was hit by the car, flipped over the car, she was run over by the car and killed. And so the whole event was very, very traumatic, and it was really quite gory and pretty disturbing. And soon after that, I had the good fortune and actually the good karma, I believe, of one of my friends' parents were involved with teachers at the Insight Meditation Society. I grew up with one of my good best friends, still one of my best friends, Hahnemann Gohlman, who's actually the son of Daniel Gohlman, the emotional intelligence writer. And so I used to hang out at their house a lot. I spent a lot of time with his dad and his mom and their family. And they could tell that I was totally fucked. Then they were like, oh, we want to help you, we care about you. You know, would you like to go meet our friend, Stephen Smith, who's a Dharma teacher, and you can maybe talk to him and maybe he can help you. And I'm like, I don't even know what a Dharma teacher is at all. But I'm like, and I liked his family. They were very much kind of my second home. I spent a lot of time there, and I trusted them. And I was like, sure, if you think going to talk to this Dharma guy is going to help me, fuck it. Why not? So I went and talked to this teacher who I actually just saw again. So it's fresh in my mind because I just saw him. He lives in Thailand, and he has lived in Thailand for the last 25 years. And I was with him a couple of weeks ago when I was over there, and I got to spend actually quite a lot of time with him and rehashing and talking about this first encounter I had with him that he has a much better memory of than I do. So it's interesting to have him play back to me the event, our first encounter, which was actually many hours. And so one of the things that I loved about the Dharma, one of the Dharma transmissions that I got, and I think that we all get little Dharma transmissions, right? We read a book, we hear a talk, we have a meditation experience where we kind of get this little seed of awakening. We get this hit of there's a different way about life. There's a better than. There's something about the inner life that I want to understand more deeply, right? And this is what the Dharma is about, and it's so great when we get the invitation and the sort of something makes sense in a way that hasn't made sense before. And so my first one was really quite huge, and I actually haven't had one that big since, which is a little disappointing, actually. But what it was is that, you know, I explained to him the experience, and I talked about my life, and talked about a lot of the things that I've been through. And two things that were really profound was the way in which Dharma and Buddhism normalizes the experience of suffering. Because I felt like there was something wrong with me, there was something wrong with life. And the First Noble Truth, as we see in Buddhism, the Buddha just right out of the gate, birth, old age, sickness, death, you get what you want, sometimes you don't. There's pain, there's frustration, there's anguish, there's loss, there's gain, there's pain. There's lots of it. You're going to have your fair share, and this is how it is. People die. Everybody dies. Sometimes tragically, sometimes quickly. But we know this. You know this. But when you see it right in front of you, and you, for those of you who have been around close encounters with death or have lost somebody close to you that's died, you know it in a much different kind of way, don't you? You really understand what really impermanence and loss is when you really lose somebody quickly, traumatically. It changes things, doesn't it? Then the Buddha is just being like, yeah, like totally, really painful. Gonna happen to everybody. And, you know, part of it was like, I was just like, and then so there was that, there was the normalizing of it. And then there was this sort of, I feel like, this almost trick of not only normalizing it, but pointing out the beauty of tragedy. And for me at the early age of 19, being like, there's a lot of wisdom in knowing that. There's so much wisdom in deeply feeling how painful life can be that it really shakes the core of your experience to the point where you might start going about things a little bit differently now. Like, if this is really the issue at hand, if I'm definitely going to die and life is definitely going to be painful, maybe I'm focusing on the wrong things. So, you know, it's like there's a wisdom in that, what I call the wisdom of dissatisfaction. And so, you know, this can depress us and blow us out and become nihilistic and can really kind of be destructive, or it can totally inspire us to be like, okay, if this is true, which it is, you know, maybe maybe I want to go about this whole life thing a little bit differently. Maybe I want to enjoy the presence of life more. Maybe I want to stop and smell the roses a little bit more. Maybe I want to be a little bit less preoccupied with my job and finances and my relationship status and the culture of the world and all of that, the world. Preoccupied with the world and my place in the world and my station in the world and who I am and what that means. Maybe I could pay a little bit less attention to that and become more interested in my inner life. And if you're sitting here, you're probably, you know, to some degree familiar with what I'm saying. So it kind of puts us in this, at this crossroads of like, okay, what's actually important? But then there was the hardest thing for me about the Dharma, and I think the ongoing struggle for me is trying to understand the difference between the first noble truth and the second noble truth. So the normalizing of dukkha, life is painful, life is stressful, there's loss, there's disappointment, there's going to be sadness, there's change, constantly changing, everything you have you will lose, and there's a knowing of that sort of normalizing of it. But then there's how I react to that truth. What do I do with that information? How I need things to be different. How much I'm convinced how much better my life would be if this, that, and the other thing hadn't happened. And how much in my imagination, in my mind, in my awareness, I'm trying to cultivate a better experience to be having. And I suffer about that. And for me, I sometimes don't know. I'm like, is this just dukkha? Is this just pain? Or is this suffering about the pain? And I find that it's really the profoundness of the Buddhist teachings. It's like, I feel like every day of my life, I'm always trying to discern, like, is this just dukkha? Or is this tanha? Is this my reaction to? Am I making things worse? Because I don't want to feel the pain? Or is this actually pain? And so for meditators, for people like us, when we start to get into that kind of domain, it's not so easy to decide or to figure out which is the difference, right? Am I in pain about something? And do I need to have compassion? And I need to be more understanding? Do I need to be more empathetic? Do I need to understand this is the issue at hand? Or am I reacting? Am I craving? Am I trying to negotiate my way out of the pain through a wide range of lots of ways to negotiate your way out of pain, right? Lots of interesting things we do to avoid change and control pain. So for me, it's like, you know, people run the Four Noble Truths like it's just like, yeah. But when I sit and I teach the Four Noble Truths next door, and I do this group every week where that's what we talk about, and I'm always just like totally amazed at how much I'm like still constantly confused by these two things. And so I found a definition for trauma that I like. What is trauma from a Western perspective? Trauma is an emotional response to a terrible event, like an accident, rape, or natural disaster. Immediately after the event, shock and denial are typical. Which I think is interesting. Immediately after a traumatic event, which is most typical, of course, is shock and then denial. I'm minimizing. It didn't happen. It wasn't so bad. It'll be okay. I'm not going to fucking tell anybody. Whatever, right? Denial. Longer-term reactions include unpredictable emotions, got it, flashbacks, strained relationships, and even physical symptoms like headaches or nausea. While these feelings are normal, some people have difficulty moving on with their lives. Psychologists can help these individuals find constructive ways of managing their emotions and trauma. So for me, a big part of this was definitely shock, but I think what I did for basically about 15 years was I was actually had tremendous denial. And I like to compartmentalize. I also, part of the way trauma has played out in my system is through the experience of hypervigilance, which is a really heightened black and white kind of thinking, all or nothing, for me, against me, life is good, life is bad, I'm good at life, I'm bad at life, this either or mentality. And so if we look at trauma in the brain or how it works in the system, it's really quite simple to start to figure out where it is. And so just a simple brain model is you have, if this is your brain, you have your oldest part of your brain, which is the lizard brain, your nervous system, the top of the spinal cord, what they call lizard brain. And then we have the limbic system, which is in here, which is the fight-flight system, reactivity. And then over the top, you have your prefrontal cortex, which is the most newest, most advanced part of our brain, which is where mindfulness takes place, where empathy takes place, where cooperation and logic and reason and good choices takes place. But if you have trauma in your system, you do what I call, you flip your lid, and your prefrontal cortex goes offline, and now you're being dictated by the limbic system. Fight, flight, freeze, right? And this is where hypervigilance gets put into place. If you're really, really traumatized, or for some reason I didn't have this experience until I did trauma therapy, the limbic system goes and then you go freeze, you dissociate. You're like about to get eaten by the tiger on the Serengeti plain and you're like, okay, it's this. So your system actually in a really great way will completely dissociate, so as you get eaten by the tiger, you don't have to experience the pain and anguish of being eaten by a tiger. But for a lot of people, they'll dissociate in situations where they're not being eaten by a tiger, where they're just being triggered by some social event or a parent or somebody else, and it's just like, boom, they're gone. Right? And so how do we come back online? So I did this, the experience I had maybe about 3 or 4 years ago. I was living in Nashville, Tennessee, and I had this insane meltdown where I just became filled with rage and anger and completely pissed off that I felt like in my whole life I've had to do everything myself and nobody has ever been there for me. And I had also what's called compassion fatigue syndrome, because I was teaching a lot and I was helping people and doing all these meditation classes and helping people and helping people and helping people. And I felt like nobody was helping me, and I was getting really fucking angry about that, and I got blown out. And I made the mistake of calling Noah Levine on the phone and told him about how angry I was. And he said to me, I'll never forget, he said, it's really interesting that you've never done any therapy. And of course, I was very reactive. I was like, well, what do you mean? And so, sort of like, you have a lot of bad shit go down. And it's just interesting. I thought he was very, choice of his words was very, he's very kind of, watch out if you work with Noah, he can be kind of tricky. I was like, interesting. And then we got in this, basically about this 2-week fight about how I was a Dharma practitioner and therapy was just bullshit Western psychology. And I even told him I didn't want to hear any of his California Dharma bullshit, because I'm old school East Coast, you know, California Dharma therapy. You know, it's just like, all right. So denial. So I found myself sitting in this office of this woman named Lee Norton, who was a forensic traumatologist who worked actually doing traumatology and for the FBI and worked on death row cases. And she was like one of the, it was interesting, her husband was coming to my meditation class, and turns out she's like one of the world's leading experts on trauma. And I was like, doesn't your wife do something like with trauma? He's like, yeah. I was like, yeah, I think I probably need to talk to her. And so I went to see her, and we did these batteries of testing, all these different traumatic tests, and she just kind of looked at me, and she's just like, I can't believe it. I said, what do you mean? She said, I can't believe how well-adjusted you are. She's like, you should be either dead in jail or in a mental institute. She's like, on paper, your complex trauma, off the chart. And I was like, yeah, well, you know, I practice the Dharma, you know, it's just denial. And she basically spelled it out to really to me very simply. She said, well, there's two ways to look at it. One, she said, actually, you probably could live the rest of your life as is. You have practices, whatever it is that you're doing seems to be working. You could live the rest of your life with this traumatic stress in your system and probably mostly be okay, but there'll always be this low-grade sense of peskiness, anxiety, dissatisfaction, which I thought was dukkha. I thought everybody dealt with this. And she was like, if most people had to be in your nervous system, they'd freak the fuck out. I was like, really? Is it really that bad in here? She's like, you're just so used to it that you have no idea how bad it is in there. Which is also very disappointing to hear. I was like, I thought I was doing pretty good, actually. And she said, or we could, you know, do some different therapy and some EM, and we could do some experiential therapy, and we could sort of pop the hood and kind of see what's going on down there. So that's a very interesting crossroads to be at. So I chose to do the therapy. And what I found out, and the reason I wanted to talk about this, is I feel, and I could be wrong, but from a Buddhist perspective, trauma is not really a dukkha as much as it's a craving, actually. It's a tanha, in the nervous system. And even in the science around trauma therapy, in the limbic system, which is really where trauma takes place, it's a highly activated. So trauma is really about the nervous system. And to some degree, we could say it's about Vedana, it's about the second foundation of mindfulness. Just these little impulses of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral that arise. And so, the weird thing about the Dharma and trauma that where they really, really, really fall into agreement is the reality that things are actually not linear. You know, like, you can track your life and make a timeline and be like, you know, what we did as human beings is we took experience and we chopped it up, right? We chopped it up into days, into years, into minutes, into seconds, and we can all tell our narrative and we can kind of say this happened and I was in first grade and it was my birthday. And we can do that, but that's not how it is. We just took impermanence and assigned linear timeline to it. So really at the core of the Dharma, we see there's no such thing as time, there's just change. We call it time, but it's not really time. It's not how it works, it's change. What's the difference between right now and the moment y'all sat down? The only thing that's happened is a whole bunch of shit has changed. It's just different now, isn't it? And you're like, no, it's just 50 minutes later. No, but it's not 50 minutes later, is it? Things have just changed. And the interesting thing about the way trauma works in the brain is if we look at the left and the right hemisphere of the brain, the left brain has language and time and sequence and memory and language, and we can name things, we know things. I know that today is Wednesday, I know that tomorrow is Thursday, I know my name is Dave Smith and I know I was born in Norfolk, Virginia. I have all these things. But then I have my right hemisphere of my brain, no time. Emotions, don't have any idea what time is. No sequence, no language. All the right brain has is emotion, sensation, and what's called iconicity, an iconic experience, which is how we make meaning. So there's actually a great book on trauma called When the Past is Present. And really the truth is, everything that's ever happened in your life right now is still a little bit alive and well in your system, isn't it? Even though we know it happened in the past and we can pretend like, oh, it happened 10 years ago and I'm totally over it. No, maybe you're not over it. So there's, you know, when we start to look at our experience, as much as we get so dictated by time and scheduling, that experientially, the left brain, thinking, name rupa vijnana, which is kind of feeling, perception, intention, language, naming things, knowing things, and the right hemisphere are constantly arising and passing in every moment. And so what happens in the dukkha is that at some point in our life, these little traumas, they get installed in the system, don't they? Something happens. Somebody dies, we're abused, we experience loss, we break a leg, we have a surgery. there's these little installation events that happen, right? These little traumatic experiences. And as time goes on, for a reason that we probably don't even know how to decipher, something happens and that gets reactivated. It comes back online. And we become re-traumatized or re-triggered. And we oftentimes think it's about something that happened recently. But maybe there was just something recently that triggered that memory, and then we become back into that experience. So if you talk to a trauma therapist or somebody who understands this, they'll say, as much as they use timeline as part of the therapy, it's a re-arising, it's a reactivity, it's a tanha, it's a repetitive craving in the nervous system that kind of switches on and off. And for the person, the individual who is trying to deal with the traumatic stress, it's very distressing. Because we try to make sense of it, we try to make meaning of it, but a lot of times the making meaning of it actually makes it worse. Because I know that for me, when I'm trying to make meaning about my emotions, and they're very difficult emotions, I tend towards blaming. I tend towards, why do I have this emotion? And I'll notice certain times I'll get activated. And sometimes I'll get activated a couple times this year. One time when Curtis died. And one time not long ago for another reason I'm not going to get into right now. I'll get blown out for like 2 weeks. And I'll just be in a state of activation. And there's really not much that I can do except for know that that's what it is. Like, okay, I'm just basically, my nervous system is tripping right now. And I'm just going to have to find my way through this. And you know, there's probably more work that I could do, and I continue to do work on this type of experience, but I'll notice that, oh, this is that. It's not that I got a parking ticket, or not that like something, because a lot of times I try to attribute it to whatever the most recent distressing event was and go, oh, it's because of that. No, it's because there's this non-linear dukkha tanha in my system, and trying to come to terms with that. So, you know, then I kind of will leave you with this evening, and curious to see what questions arise. You know, what can we do? You know, what can be done about this? And the thing that's most distressing, I think, about it is this is not something that you can do in your cognitive. You're not going to outsmart it. In fact, most people will say that when it comes to trauma, talk therapy is essentially a waste of time and it does nothing. So what can we do? You know, there's different experiential therapies that are just coming online now. There's EMDR and there's somatic experience, and the Western world is starting to kind of understand it a little bit, but we really were in the infantile stages of really trying to come to terms with it. From a Buddhist perspective, and one of the reasons why I feel the Dharma is so transformative and so important is that I definitely remember, and I definitely like to pinpoint the fact that when I had this encounter with the trauma therapist, she was very much surprised about how well adjusted I was, and I really believe that that's attributed to the amount of mindfulness practice and loving kindness practices that I've done that have allowed me to create an internal relationship of awareness and empathy for my challenges. Didn't get rid of it, didn't heal it, but it definitely taught me how to regulate the arising of a traumatic stress, a reactivity. And I really believe, actually, even more than mindfulness, the thing that we can start to do is start to try to have a loving kindness, forgiveness, compassionate relationship for the challenges that we encounter. Which is also, again, experiential in the sense of you can't just switch that on, can you? It's not like mindfulness where I'm like, just go back to the breath. Or I'll think, just go back to the loving kindness. You'd be like, where the fuck is it? Where's the forgiveness? Where is it? And so there's this experiential, right brain, emotional, iconic part of our experience where I believe the heart practices dwell. And where we can lean into those parts of our emotional life and learn how to tolerate and to feel into and give ourselves permission to feel the distressing emotions that we want to avoid change and control. And the capacity, you develop a capacity and ability to do that. And the edge, it's like, for me, like, the emotional trauma has got this sort of razor's edge to it. And as I lean into it, it's really cutting and really sharp. And I'm like, right? And so I want to avoid that for good. But what happens is I start to lean into it, and I start to lean into it, and I start to kind of go, okay. It dulls down a little bit, right? It becomes a little bit more rounder. And I can maybe lean into it a little bit. I can kind of sit with it. I can touch it and be like, ooh, that's still pretty rough. But actually, it's not going to kill me, which is the problem with trauma. When the flood gets flipped in fight flight, where now we're living in a safety zone where I'm feeling unsafe and everything is life or death. Right? But if I can feel into my experience and be like, no, this isn't life or death. This is just really emotionally painful right now. It's very distressing. I think that it's a very slow process. And so I find that for myself and people I've worked with over the years, that the addition of a form of type of a trauma therapy, or there's some things that you can do, and some of them really are quite strange. I've done some very strange things with my trauma therapist. I've drawn pictures with my left hand, with my right hand. I've done some EMDR. I've done some Gestalt inner parts work, and all of the stuff was very awkward and very uncomfortable. But 109 hours of it seemed to do me good. So, you know, I think that when we look at, and one of the dangers, I think, of Dharma practice, if you can create with the denial of trauma, can come what we oftentimes call as a spiritual bypass, where we are can using mindfulness practice as a way to actually avoid, which I actually got really quite good at. I had basically, for about a decade, mastered the art. I didn't feel sad for about 10 years because I created a system in my practice to completely avoid sadness. Now, unfortunately, there were some side effects of that, so I don't recommend that. But we can get into these weird territories where we can actually use mindfulness practices or liberation practices as a way to repress or to avoid experience. Like he said, go back to the breath. I'm just going, but just doing what was said, using that kind of strategy as a way to completely avoid parts of our experience. And so I'll leave you with sort of the three C's that I learned. Is that when it comes to trauma, it's really important that we can try to hold it with some compassion and a deep sense of care and a deep patience and a really embodied understanding of like, man, there's some shit going on in me that's really difficult and really challenging and really caring about that. The other thing is really important is to learn how to be cooperative. And again, cooperation is the basis of empathy and compassion. Learning how to include other people or try to take advantage of whatever resources you have and trying to be like, okay, this is here, I'm going to try to work with this on some level. And the third C that's probably not so much talked about is actually how to kind of be creative in your endeavor. And so sometimes art and therapy, and I know a lot of people who have done like things like equine therapy, a lot of the stuff that at first glance were like, oh, that's just California bullshit. And be like, oh, actually, no, that's actually really quite useful. You know, like trying to be creative and doing some things that maybe pull you out of your comfort zone are really, really important. And also the fourth one that sometimes I think about is trying to be curious about what can be done rather than being dismissive or in denial or pretending like everything's okay. So those are some of my thoughts about that, and I appreciate your attention. And I'm sorry if you don't have any trauma and none of this is relevant to your life.